40% of people, of customers who don't choose a sustainable product are doing so because they say there's not enough choice. So for me, it will grow for sure, but it needs the both effort of the consumers and the brands. You know, they have to work in a synergy to make it happen.
I'm Tatiana Antonella Beia, founder of Goombook, and you're listening to Forward Talks, Conversations That Matter. This episode continues our special series, Climate Leaders, Rising Up to COP28, in partnership with MasterCard with the support of Dubai Government Media Office. We're sharing inspiring stories of sustainability leaders and climate champions driving impact from our region to the world. I'm joined today by Florence Bulté, Chief Sustainability Officer at Chaloup Group. Chaloup Group has been a creator of luxury experiences across the Middle East for over six decades, and Florence is responsible for fostering their culture of business ethics and integrity, and promoting sustainability through advocacy and partnerships. We talk about how they engage with their supply chain to embed sustainability across the group, how the luxury industry is working on recycling and circularity, and her expectations from COP28. Florence has worked in the luxury business for nearly two decades in Australia, Singapore, and the Middle East.
For me, the turning point, personally, I'm speaking, was during an executive training at INSEAD in Paris, where our finance course, believe it or not, was all about, and I'm speaking like 12 years ago, was all about focusing on the red line, so how to perform, how to achieve your objective, while respecting the blue line, you know, like how do you do business, how do you achieve your objectives, you know, so taking care of all the social, environmental, and governance aspects. And for me, I would say that was kind of it was very highlighting at that time, and I started to, you know, to think about it and include it into the what I was doing from a business perspective. And at that time, I was working for Chaloup, and in 2015, I was proposed, you know, to take over the sustainability for Chaloup and to, you know, fully put into implementation this concept on achieving doing a business, but doing it in a very purposeful way.
So that's how it started. Ahead of time. Incredible. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. At that time, I mean, honestly, nobody was, 12 years ago, really speaking about this concept.
And I would also add that what I've witnessed from outside is the incredible engagement from the leadership. I mean, the sustainability has definitely come from a will of the leadership within Chaloup to embed it as part of the culture of the group, right?
Totally, totally. Because so first, again, it's a family business, and the vision was also to take part and to become a member of the United Nations Global Compact in 2014. And again, for a family business, you know, it was quite a commitment, and that's how everything started. So we built, you know, a division, a sustainability division. We built a strategy. And with this engagement, we had the responsibility to issue a sustainability report every year, which was, you know, publicly available. And everything started from that, because we wanted to walk the talk. We wanted our KPIs to be relevant. So we needed to have access to data. At that time, having access to data was extremely difficult. So we started to build, you know, some internal process software to capture this data, create an ecosystem of data owners. If I'm thinking about diversity and inclusion, or the planet, the environmental side, how do you capture data? How do you create your baseline? How do you set KPIs which are relevant, bold, but realistic for your business? So that's what we did in 2014. And I'm proud to say also that, you know, for the first time last year, this sustainability report was audited by a third party, you know, which is also extremely important because you need to obviously, you have obviously a qualitative part, but the quantitative part is extremely important and you need to show progress. And even sometimes if things are not going as fast as you want, but you need to be super transparent about it.
This is a very good point also, because when we talk about reporting nowadays, there are so many frameworks out there. You have your internal reports, or you choose the one framework, but you report your own way. And it's very hard. A very small amount of companies actually have their reports audited. And as a consumer or as a third party, it's hard to understand how much that report is actually useful, or is the data really accurate? But you come from an industry that is very complicated. You're a very big group. You represent many luxury brands. You're based in the Middle East, where there's a big need to import all this. So tell us more about the challenges that you have, because internally as a group, you're very sustainable, but I'm sure you also have to deal with your suppliers, with your partners, and how do you work with them as well?
First, I would say the way we started to work with our partners through our partner chapter within our sustainability strategy was to make sure we were conducting business in all integrity. So we started very early to create a supplier scorecard based on the 10 principles of the United Nations Global Compact. So labor rights, human rights, protection of the environment, transparency, anti-corruption. And we sent, this scorecard to all our suppliers. I mean, every year now we have 1,300 suppliers assessed towards this scorecard. And that was helping us. It was more opening a dialogue with them, you know, setting the tone of our expectation and see how they were doing in their own sustainability journey. So we have this system going on since I think 2015 now, and more than I would say the scorecard, it's also about organizing webinars. So we organize webinars with our suppliers, and it's really a platform to discuss and ask questions and clarify. And I would say now the next challenge will be on the road to our net zero journey. So if I take a step back a bit, 2014, when we started the sustainability strategy under the planet pillar, we started the decarbonization strategy. 2021, we thought we were mature enough, to take this commitment to pave the way to the net zero. So that's what we've done. We assessed a baseline in 2021. 2023, our midterm targets were validated. So non-surprisingly, 99% of our emissions are scope 3. So the midterm target, we made a commitment to reduce our scope 1 and 2 by 50% by 2032. And our scope 3 by 30% by 2032. So now, what do you do when 99% of your emissions are scope 3? So what we are going to launch next year, and we are really excited about it, it's a supplier engagement program. So we are partnering with Schneider on this project. I mean, they have been our partner since the beginning for net zero. And the idea would be to do a mapping of our suppliers, see our suppliers which have already, started this journey of net zero, and the suppliers who have not. And again, in an idea of a collaboration and making a positive impact and making sure, we mobilized our suppliers to reach also our objectives, we'll be doing some education, awareness, supporting them to help them to capture data, because we will need to have access to their data, obviously, accurate data. sharing them in a very transparent way, setting priorities. Okay, so for them or and for us, what would help us more, in our journey, doing projections of actions needed to be taken. And obviously, reporting on this journey. So we are—it's a huge project. The supplier engagement program. We're gonna start it next year, but obviously, it's gonna keep on going until 2040. But this is also the power of collaboration. I mean, we cannot, it's an ecosystem, so we cannot work in silo. And this, I think this era we've all understood is completely finished. We really need to collaborate and support each other in the journey. So that's how we're going to engage our suppliers in the journey and make it very concrete and very tangible.
I love that you used a couple of times the word paving the way. And I have to say, you've been paving the way on very different fronts. I remember you were already very active since 2010 when Goombook started. Chaloub was already a point of reference in terms of employee engagement, awareness, education. Again, you were one of the first signatories of the UN Global Compact for the UAE and the region. You were the first big group that would actually work hard to install solar panels on your buildings. And I remember it took you a long time because of rules and regulations and policies, finding also the right partners. And then also looking at digitalization in a sector that has been somehow in crisis in terms of consumers loving to go online. And you've been really strong at moving most of your business also on the digital side. So it's incredible how flexible and how strong you've been in terms of adapting to the market, but also embedding sustainability in all this. And now you're talking about education with your suppliers, but I know that you're also working really hard on education with your consumers.
Yeah, I mean, consumers, I would say education, you can take it in several ways. If we talk about consumers, PwC studies showed that 7 customers out of 10 in the region are saying that they're ready to adopt sustainable behavior. When it comes to potential blockage, we always think about price. Actually, if you take UAE, 82% of the customers are saying that they're ready to pay a higher price for a sustainable product which match the needs. And matching the needs is the key word here, because 40% of people, of customers who don't choose a sustainable product are doing so because they say there's not enough choice on the market. And it's completely true. 30% say that it's because of the price, and 30% says because it's about the quality of the product. So when you say educating, I think it's also, as a retailer, it's a responsibility to put on the market a choice for the customers, and show them that yes, you can choose this product, and this will fit, the mindset shift that you want, because sometimes you're thinking about it, but at the end, if you don't have a product in front of you who is matching your need in terms of, if we take our case, design, you just don't buy it. So that's also what we want to do with our customers. So we have an internal strategy division, which showed that more than 60% of the luxury customers in the UAE are ready to buy pre-loved items, for example. So based on that, again, because I really think it's our responsibility and it makes business sense to provide, the products our customers want, Level Shoes, our shoe concept in Dubai Mall, have created an online business of pre-loved business. So basically, you can sell a pre-loved shoe or pair of shoe or bags, and you can buy pre-loved items on this platform. And this is working extremely well. Why? Because it's based on the customer needs, and we are again answering a need, and at the same time also educating our customers, saying, look, you have the fresh product, you know, the new design, the new collection, etc. You have also the possibility to buy these pre-loved items. And in luxury business, it's also a need, because sometimes our customers want to buy a product which is standing out, you know, something which might be a bit vintage, or something which is from a collection which is unique, and you can find a capsule collection that you cannot find anymore, etc. So this also putting on the market products and concept that fits our sustainability strategy, but fits also the customer needs, participates to the evolution of the mindset as well.
And it validates also, I think, the movement, because for so many years it was more of a hippie thing to buy pre-loved, and now we actually say vintage. The narrative and also the vocabulary used is different. The fact that such a luxury brand such as Level Shoes is actually offering these items means that they're valid. They are still luxury items.
And I will give you another example. So this is one of our brand, Christophe, who is a silverware, luxury silverware brand. So the business model has been developed in France, because again, it matches, you know, customer need. But we identified the fact that, you know, the customers of Christophe in France liked vintage items as well. So, you know, Christophe is a historical brand. I mean, it's got over 200 years of existence. So what the team has been doing is buying out Christophe product in the antiques market all over France, refurbishing them in our factory in Yenville, in Normandy, and selling it under the vintage label. So first it was a pop-up in Le Bon Marché in Paris. And it was so successful that, you know, now, actually a few weeks back, they launched an online platform where you can sell your vintage item, and you can also buy, and it's available in a few stores also in Paris. So yes, it's a mindset shift, but also mindset. I think there's an education part also, because when people are seeing that it's available and why we are doing that and why it's it's important to do that. It's participate also to the education of our customers, and again, it's very successful. So it's fitting again the sustainability strategy. It's fitting. It's matching a customer needs, and it's good for the environment.
When we come back, I talk to Florence about circularity in the fashion industry and her expectations from COP28. That's right after the short break. I wanted to take a minute and tell you about our partners, MasterCard, who helped make this podcast possible. Did you know that from the 1st of January 2028, all newly produced MasterCard plastic cards will be made from more sustainable materials? Many banks today are already offering sustainable MasterCard products, so you too can become a part of the movement by asking your bank for a sustainable card today. Thank you to MasterCard for their support of Forward Talks and Goombook. Welcome back to my conversation with this episode's climate leader, Florence Bulté, Chief Sustainability Officer at Shell Hoop Group. I would love to hear from you more about circularity in the luxury and fashion. Is it something that is really growing? Are luxury brands looking into recycled materials with more interest?
For sure. So We are retailers and distributors, so we don't own, brands. And but I can tell you for sure, the luxury brands are definitely looking into it. Whether it's a new material, if you take brands like Adolfo Dominguez that we launched in MOE, or Stella McCartney also. So this type of designers, this type of brands are looking at creating fashion brands using very innovative. Advanced material, offering, for example, Tumi, the luggage luggage brand, repair service, and so definitely they are looking into that direction. And my conviction is that it's an ecosystem. So it will gain in power when the brands will be able to offer more of this service and more of this business concept on the market and put more product like that on the market, and when the customers will ask even more for it. And I'm always saying, as a consumer, we really have the responsibility of being demanding with the brands to ask questions. So it can be a traceability, or why can't I repair my bag instead of buying another one? So it's our responsibility also as a citizen to request for this type of services. So for me, it will grow for sure, but it needs the both effort of the consumers and the brands. They have to work in synergy to make it happen.
Do you feel that there could be also some support from the public sector in terms of regulations or policies?
Sure. What we've been seeing, for example, if I take our decarbonization strategy, there was, as you were saying, we worked really hard to make this solar panel implemented. Now I'm proud to say we have four sites equipped with a solar panel in the UAE. But we would like to, roll them up in the other seven countries in which we operate, and we are blocked by regulations. So, but when you take mobility, shift to EV vehicles, it's kind of easy now to find the light vehicles, EV vehicles. But when it comes to heavier vehicles, it's very difficult to find. And this, of course, infrastructure and evolution of regulatory framework would definitely help us in our journey. In Europe, this weekend, the Fashion Coalition. They were posting, there's a new regulation for fashion in Europe, where as a fashion brand, you cannot use the terms, organic, biodegradable, without backing it up with a figure and a timeline.
Amazing. Hopefully this will come also to the UAE.
I hope so. So it's to come back to this ecosystem. For sure, for some subjects, you will have to have the input and the support of the government to make this, regulatory framework evolve. And that's also what we are looking forward, hopefully, from the COP, right? To have this synergy, to have an acceleration. Everyone knows what is kind of needed, but we need an acceleration of the pace, So
thank you for bringing this up, because actually this is usually my last question of the episode is, what are your expectations for COP?
Look, for us, we've touched upon it, and we've been starting our sustainability journey in 2014, and now I'm so happy to see this mobilization of public sector, private sector, social enterprises, NGOs, come together. So there's been already an acceleration. I think the COP for me will be a catalyst for engagement. So as a group, we will also, announce strong partnerships and new partnerships during COPs. evolution of a regulatory framework, for sure. So it's really what we, other than the stock take, obviously, which is major, we always... let's not forget about it. But for the private sector, it's really an acceleration of anyone's journey. And if a company has not started, then you know maybe it will be a catalyst for change and to help the company to start the sustainability journey. And as we were saying, for me, it's also the legacy. So I can tell you that none of the projects we're going to launch during COP will be short term. So it's all going to be long term, 3 years and plus projects. And that's what's really interesting about it, right? I mean, COP is a trigger. But what we want to see is for the momentum to keep on after COP. And I hope, you know, we'll have analysis and we'll have a strong outcome out of this COP as a learning exercise as well. And we will be able to see after COP partners coming together and starting this project together. So that's really what I'm hoping from COP.
Can we have a sneak peek of the projects that you're going to launch?
Well, it's without giving any details, but it's all about again the SDG 17 collaboration partnership for goals. You know, we always use this term, but we really need to dig into the what it entails. You know, like again, sustainability. In sustainability, you need to think in system. So I think this SDG 17, though it's the last one, it's for me one of the most important. And so it will be our project will really be about, strong and innovating partnerships.
Thank you so much, Florence. Thank you for your time. I know you're very, very busy lately. And I really look forward to seeing you at COP and
pleasure.
See. And learn more about your project.
Thank you, Tatiana. Thank you to Gombook for all the great things you are doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining me today. This special series of Forward Talks is brought to you by Gombook in partnership with MasterCard and with the support of Dubai Government Media Office. I'm Tatiana Antonella Beya, and this episode was produced by Samantha Kerouz, Anuradha Bhattacharya, Janelle Lopez, and Chirag Desai. See you again soon.